In the interest of community service, Power 88 presents live talk shows to inform, enlighten, and to stimulate thought and dialogue. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KCEP or the EOB. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the program. Or call in and participate at 647-3688.
Funding for Enterprising People is provided by the Southern Nevada Water Authority, Black Image Magazine, and KCEP. And now, here's Kimberly.
Okay. Hello and welcome to Enterprising People. I'm Kimberly Bailey Trureau, and I'm so happy that you've joined us on this beautiful Tuesday. I know we're still all practicing social distancing. I'm actually broadcasting from my home, but the show is going to be fabulous. So please call in if you have any questions at 702-647-3688. But first, before we get started, we have to give a shout out to our sponsors, the Southern Nevada Water Authority, Power 88, KCEP, and Las Vegas Black Image Magazine. So I have to just read this bio because I'm so delighted and honored to have Mr. Solomon Ali on the show today. But his bio reads like a book, but Solomon R.C. Ali scales profitable companies across healthcare, technology, and energy sectors through the acquisition of funding and management consulting. Mr. Ali and his team of consultants have collectively managed and successfully closed more than 140 mergers and acquisitions and arranged more than $250 million in structured investment capital and financing. In addition, Mr. Ali is the CEO of NDR Energy Group, one of the largest minority-owned energy companies in the United States. He is the CEO and Revolutionary Concepts, which owns multiple technology patents licensed by smart home companies, including Ring, owned by Amazon, and Skybell. Mr. Ali is currently host of a podcast, MBA Minority Business Access. So, Mr. Ali, hi, how are you?
Hi, Kimberly, how are you today?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us on Enterprising People and, again, contributing this wonderful op-ed, Coronavirus and the New American Economy, to Las Vegas Black Image Magazine. We really appreciate your contribution.
Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for having me on. I think it's very important to talk about this.
Yes, but tell us a little bit about the op-ed. We could start with that for our listeners because we are headed for a new American economy, right?
Yes, we are. And as you know, just like the coronavirus has affected many of us, it will also affect us economically as we continue to move forward in society. Some would say, and I would say this as well, that it's going to place us somewhat at a disadvantage. We will have to get a little bit more savvy on utilizing the technology and taking advantage of that. But technology will allow somewhat of a level playing field, but it won't keep people from their typical biases, from doing business with us or giving us the contracts and things of that nature with the profitable margins that we will be needing and looking for.
I think that's big, Mr. Ali, because, you know, especially for minority-owned businesses, access to capital is so big. So do you think we're going to go backwards after this coronavirus passes a little bit?
As the economy as a whole, absolutely. People of color, and as people of color, I'm going to speak about our people, blacks. Yes, we're going backwards. You have diversities right now, supply chains, A, B, and C levels. Well, the weaker levels are going to be broken off. They will no longer exist. As a lot of people will realize and see that thousands of companies will no longer exist. Well, when you take that into consideration, companies typically hire those that look like them. If we're losing a majority of our companies due to lack of funding, lack of credit, or just not able to maintain because of the customer base of what just happened for the last 45 to 60 days, yes, that's going to set us back
Wow. And you know, this whole business stimulus money that's supposed to be handed down, especially through the SBA, they ran out of that. Do you predict that, how are the mom and pop, how are black-owned business going to access some of that money? I know the CARE Act exists. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm going to just be very frank.
Okay.
You know, we're out of luck. You know that.
Okay,
and
I know.
The government is behind, okay, because they weren't expecting this. So this is like a tidal wave that's hitting them right now. And so now you got to clean up your house after the wave has already pulled back. So you have to put your infrastructure and everything in place. And about time they get all that infrastructure and all the people in there to help go ahead and distribute this, we're gone. Our businesses are gone.
Yeah.
We can't wait until they get their infrastructure. It's too late for us. We weren't prepared for it. And so, and it's not that anyone in particular is doing a bad job. We just weren't prepared for something like this.
Yeah. And you're basically just to break those racial barriers have always been a difficulty for small businesses, small black-owned businesses anyway. So now it's almost like people are out for themselves. So they're definitely not thinking, oh, let's put this set aside for black-owned companies. Let's do this. You don't predict that that will happen, huh?
Well, listen, we have approximately 5 million or so companies in the United States every year, right?
Right.
And we have roughly 100,000 black-owned companies throughout the whole United States with approximately 10 employees or more. That's it. So the numbers are already skewed. If you take that to the public markets, where we're basically non-existent, you have 4,000 publicly traded companies that access the market. You have 13 black companies that are publicly traded, which means that we don't exist. Now, of the 13, I used to be on the board and the office of three of those. Okay, so we don't exist. Now, you take a company like Amazon. Amazon, for 14 years, approximately 14 years, they were losing money. They couldn't go traditionally, right, to the bank because you need historical financials to get access to capital. So how did they get their capital and stay in business for 14 years until they became the Amazon as we know today? Because they were public. They had access to the capital markets. And why are we not there? It's not that we don't have great ideas. It's not that we don't work hard. It's not that we're not deserving. Okay? We're never given the opportunity. And when we get there, we find that the regulators deal with us in the same manner that they deal with everyone else, but not understanding our plight. Our challenges are different, okay?
Yes.
So if I have 10 white friends and their disposable cash is roughly $75,000, and I have 10 black friends, well, their disposable cash is $5,000. Well, if I go to my 10 black friends and they all decide to give me everything they have, which we know that never happens, right? That would be $50,000 to help me run my business and do the things I need to do. That won't take me very far. But if I go to my 10 white friends and they decide to give me everything they have, I have $750,000. And that's where we start seeing the disparity of what's taking place. My network, my black friends may not be able to introduce me to various people or contracts and things of that nature than what my white friends can introduce me to. And so the white friends are going to be like, well, if they introduce me, you still have the problem of do the people want to hire you or use your company and its services because you don't really look like them.
Yeah.
They don't think about us. We're never thought about when they're putting these equations and things together, when they're building things, okay? We're always the ones on the front lines. Like right now, we're having to trade our lives and risk our lives to determine if we want to eat and feed our families.
Yeah.
Where many business owners and executives, they're at home. They're not working in the grocery stores, at the fast food places, or as the janitors, or as the nurses cleaning up and things of that nature behind everyone. They're at home. They're safe. So we're falling further and further behind. Most of our families are what? Black women at the head of the household, raising families.
Mm-hmm.
And still having to go out and work. And so now our very existence is placed in jeopardy.
Wow. Wow, Mr. Ali. But, you know, and you know, my Spelman sister I graduate with, she, Rosalind Brewer, she sits on the board of Amazon. I was just wondering about advocacy, because I know Rosalind is conscious, and especially as it relates to black people. She's also COO of Starbucks. But what happens with us when we reach this level of executive positioning that we assimilate so that we can, let's say, go along with the team player? Because if you do advocate for sometimes, and this is not me, but I know some people feel as though if they advocate for their own people in those high positions, that in some way they'll be ousted. How do you, as CEO of your company, how do you leverage that to make sure that black people get contracting and those kind of things?
Well, one of the things that I try to do is, one, I understand it's really difficult working with our people. And the only reason it's difficult working with our people, because there's a learning curve. See, we have a perception of what we think things should be and are from the outside looking in. But when you get in there, you all of a sudden realize, oh, wait, there's a little bit more to it than what I could see from the outside. And so I try not to be fearful if I reach back and try to help someone, that there's going to be a backlash against me. Okay. I don't worry about that. And I would challenge each and every executive or officer, any upper management, not to worry about that. You know, be careful, of course, of who you hire. Make sure you do your investigation and your due diligence, but hire the right people for the job. That'll get it done.
Yeah. But I have to just think, with all that you have just, it just, you know, I'm kind of, it's scary. I just want to know, after this coronavirus, what do you think this is going to mean for Black America here in the United States? What do you think we need to really be doing right now so that we can still play a part in the economy?
Well, we are the largest consumers. We have our GDP is approximately $23 trillion and some change. Black America, mostly women, we spend roughly between 4.5% and about 7%. So that means we're spending somewhere around $2 to $3 trillion. Okay. Now, when you place this in perspective, here's what you're looking at. If the United States is the largest global economy in the world, and the rest of the world depends on our economy, that means people of color, we play a significant role in the global economy because we're such consumers. Unfortunately, we flip that around. We're also the worst savers there are, and that's partially because we don't have enough to save, because we don't get those great jobs early on. We normally get them later in life, and even when we get them later in life, we're still not paid the same. Even if you start a business, normally, listen, I had a contract with one of the oil companies, and they gave us a quarter of a cent, which means basically on every $1 million, we only made $2,500.
Wow.
And at some point, I had to say, okay, it's not worth being a part of this program as a minority and doing this, because I can't even pay a secretary what I need to pay her on a monthly basis based on that. And the supplier was fine with it, who I bought my gas from. And so was the end user, which was a utility company who I sold it to. They were all fine with it. They thought it was perfectly okay and I should be able to make it.
Wow. And I was
like, okay. So that's how they perceive us, and that's what they think of us. So they're getting a tax write-off for hiring a minority contractor, and they're taking advantage of this tax write-off, but we don't even make enough to be able to even support our families or hire people at decent wages. So we're getting further behind, to answer your question. We're already behind, and we will get less and less contracts as the days will come. Because, as you know, a lot of our competition these days are white women are considered minorities. So they're going and they're competing for the same contracts that we compete for in business.
I know. But how do we change this paradigm? That's what I'm trying to figure out, because this is what we need to do. Over and over again. The days of advocacy, my father, Bob Bailey, you know, he definitely had to advocate so that minorities would get contracting and actually push for that. But we don't seem to have that same kind of advocacy as it deals with economics.
Here's what we need to do. We need to start pulling our resources together.
Okay.
Our kids coming out of college need to start pulling their resources together. Whether they buy a little small store, the corner store, keep working their jobs and things of that nature and build up that store, and then buy the second store and the third store. We need to look at entrepreneurship in a little different way. Sometimes we need to stay at home a little longer. Parents need to keep the kids at home a little longer. Let's not push them out there, because we know they're not ready. Even if they're ready mentally, they're not ready what? Financially. We know that they're going to be struggling, okay? But if we can start pooling our resources, and if I get 10 people and we can buy one store, and then the following year or two, we can buy two more stores and then three more stores. Well, I still got my income from the job, and now I got passive income from the investment that I made. And then if we could take that public and open it up to other people within our communities, now we begin to have what? More job creation within our own communities amongst ourselves, okay? And we're able to move it forward, you know. I'm mindful that what Rosa Parks did, and everyone says, oh, well, we can't do that these days. Why not? We're the largest consumers. If we stop going to any store, and I will just pick one, and I hope nothing happens by saying this, we stop going to Walmart for 45 days, what you think is going to happen to Walmart?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
They will fill it.
Their stock is going to fill it. Okay, not only will their stock fill it, okay, but it's going to cause a serious decrease in their stock.
Yeah. Okay?
Which will then allow us an opportunity to take advantage of the stock. Okay, so we got to start looking at things like that. It's not that we're not in control, but be conscious of where you're spending your money. And are the companies that you're spending your money with, are they socially responsible and caring about the things that you care about? That's how we make a difference. That's how we help us. If they're not hiring us and giving us good wages to where we can take care of a family, then maybe we shouldn't be patronizing them.
Yeah, but you know what, Mr. Ali, that mentality is so hard. This same dialogue, and you know, it's been going on, especially within the Black community and the Black professionals. We have recognized this for quite a while. Do you believe that the coronavirus is the big wake up? Do you think for Black people that something is going to jar us to know that economic unification really is our only recourse during this crisis?
I hope that it will. I hope that it will make us more conscious, aware that if we don't take care of each other, that they're not going to take care of us neither.
Right.
But who's to say? Sometimes, you know, it may wake us up for a day, and then we go back to sleep when things get comfortable again. I'm based out of North Carolina. We have an office in Georgia.
Okay.
And
I was wondering what you thought about the Georgia governor, about him lifting the ban in Georgia with this coronavirus. Do you want to say anything about that?
What can I say? I'm probably with most Americans, definitely Americans of color. I think it may be a little too early. I know we all need to get back to work, but we're the ones dying.
Yeah.
We're the ones on the front line. And we're the ones that have most of the health issues due to the lack of being able to afford good health care. Taking care of our diabetes and heart problems and things of that nature. So, no, I don't think it's a good idea to be going back right now and then opening it up, because
yeah,
that affects us directly.
Correct.
I think I read that we're at 40% of the deaths. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yep.
Okay.
And the population doesn't even dictate that, but we're over, the numbers are over. And, when we talk about systemic racism, especially within the healthcare system, do you think, because people say, I'm talking about the masses, and they say, well, Black and Hispanics are being hit the hardest because of pre-existing conditions. Do you think the society, the mass society, is just looking at, well, if you're hit the hardest, it's because you all haven't done what you had to do for your health. You have to take personal responsibility for that, and that the whole idea of re-looking at the healthcare system so that people are properly serviced. Do you think that now, not just Black people, but I mean people in the control seat for the health care, they will relook at this because of this and say, well, we have to make some positive changes so that we don't have this stigma, we don't have people of color being ousted out of the health care system? Do you think we'll see a change with that?
I would hope and pray so, but I'm just going to be honest. No, it's not. Let's get real. Because that means that we got to increase wages. That means profitability goes down for for a lot of companies. And so, no, it's not going to change, because we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in. It's not that we won't go to the doctor when we need to go to the doctor, but the doctor is expensive to go to, and we really can't afford to go to the doctor like that. We have other needs that supersede that, maybe putting food on the table, paying a bill or two. So we have choices, and we're always constantly met with choices that we have to make, that when my same counterpart is a white man, he's not having to make that choice.
Yeah.
He has disposable cash. Well, he doesn't have to determine, if I go to the doctor, I can't pay this bill.
Yeah.
We're constantly having to make choices. Oh, and as I said before, a lot of our households, okay, are single family households, and it's predominantly driven with the woman being the head. So that may mean that, hey, I can't buy my son or my daughter a pair of shoes right now.
Yeah.
And it's that real for us out there. And I think now it's just getting real. I recall a time ago, in 2007, everything in life was going really great. I had a chain of nursing homes, and I was making a lot of money. And I said, I pulled myself up by the bootstraps, okay? And I said, if I can do it, everyone can do it. And I began to have no sympathy or empathy for other people, because I thought, oh, it's easy. Anyone can do it. Well, God taught me something. I lost it all.
Wow.
And in losing it all, I learned that no one can't just do this. You need a hand. You need a helping hand to help you up. You got to do the work, But if you don't have someone that's going to have good credit, if you don't have someone that has cash and that's willing to back you and walk that journey with you, even as you're making your mistakes and don't give up on you and see you all the way through the other end, you don't get there.
Mr. Ali, it's really something else. I know we have to close out, but Mr. Ali, please tell everyone how they can stay in contact with you. I know you have a podcast that's wonderful, MBA, Minority Business Access. Is there any way do you have a book out right now? I know you did a wonderful op-ed for the May issue of Las Vegas Black Image Magazine, but how can people stay abreast to everything that you're doing?
Well, one of the best ways is, especially if they're entrepreneurs and looking to become entrepreneurs, because our society and economy is going to change and most people are going to be independent contractors, is just tune into my podcast, MBA, and you can get it pretty much access to it from any platform or just go on to SolomonRCAli.info and you can go right into our website and see what we're actually doing and what's actually going on.
All right. Thank you so much again, Mr. Solomon Ali, CEO of NDR Energy Group and Revolutionary Concepts. This has been such an honor, and you have to promise me you're going to come back because I need an hour with you.
Kimberly, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ali. Again, we want to thank the Southern Nevada Water Authority, Power 88, KCEP, Las Vegas Black Image Magazine, and you, too, for being enterprising people.